At Quite the Thing Media, we aim to bring you the best podcasts produced by independent creators, made without constraints.
Podcast Father here. Join me on my journey as I start out as the indie podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artist? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster with your host, the Podcast Father.
Welcome to another episode of Indie Podcaster. I'm your host, Jeff, aka Podcast Father, and joining me is Mike Zago. He has a little podcast too, The Link, a podcast with Mike Zago. Thanks for joining me again, man.
What's up? What's up? Follow me at the link underscore podcast on Instagram and Twitter. There's the plug. I'm over with it. It's done now. We can talk about the other one.
Yeah. Why didn't we do that on the first episode? I'm sorry.
I wanted to mix it in. No, I was ready. I feel like I nailed that one.
That was great. Great.
Thanks.
And if you guys do go check out the link, he will share with you secrets on how to get about 5 listens a week. No, I'm just kidding, man.
It's 10. No, I'm just kidding.
And they're all from us. They're all from us. Exactly. Just downloaded it over and over again.
That's right. I'll take it. Numbers are numbers, baby.
This episode's a little bit different. It's actually I'm going to talk to the creator and host of Cold War Conversations. We're going to share that interview. His name is Ian Sanders. This is another example of a podcast that over 3 years' time from when Ian started it has really grown. I know at the beginning of the year it was by far over 1.5 million downloads, I think. So he's really created something great here. Did you have a chance to look into this a little bit, Mike?
Yeah, dude, super successful, very impressive, and found his niche perfectly. This is a Cold War pod. It's really good. If you're into history, it's going to be up your alley. It's going to inspire some emotion, and it's good stuff, right? But also saying the word cold, I don't know if you've seen the weather on the East Coast today. It's hot. It's real hot. And I can't have my air conditioner on when we're recording podcasts. So I'm a little triggered by the word cold, but pod is worth it. Listen, it's great. Still trigger.
Are you going to make it through? Are you going to pass out? Or
I'll make it. I'll fight through.
We'll have to get you one of them life alerts just to get you through this
just in case
recording next time.
Yeah.
But no, you touched up on it. It is a legitimate podcast and it's incredible. The guest he gets, people that experienced and had major, I'm going to say ordeals, but I don't know if that's the right word, during the Cold War. And a lot of the people he talks to are actually right in the middle of it. He himself he probably wouldn't agree, but he's a historian, man. Just talking to this guy, you realize that whole time period, how much knowledge he has. It's an incredible conversation. And it's another great example of building something from the ground up. As far as a creator goes.
Very cool. Yeah, he knows his stuff. That's my favorite people to talk to are people that as soon as you engage with them, you know that they are deeply knowledgeable about the topic and it just feels that way. So it's comfortable to listen to.
And don't sleep on the Cold War. It had an impact on a lot of the world in a lot of different areas. And we go into that a little bit in this conversation. So everybody, make sure you stay tuned. Don't turn it off yet because we're going to have a kick-ass interview with Ian and talk about Cold War Conversations. But before we do that, let's get a little business in. Myself and this podcast are proud members of Quite the Thing Media. Make sure you're checking out Quite the Thing Media. Go to quitethethingmedia.com. If you want to go to my personal site, it's actually at Quite the Thing Media, quitethethingmedia.com/podcastfather. There you can request to be on this podcast as a guest. Also, a review from me on site. Make sure you're checking out all the great original podcasts on site and the independent creators on site, quitethethingmedia.com. Couldn't do this podcast without the hosting platform, Captivate FM. Captivate FM is great, guys. I can't tell you how great it is. I could talk about it all day, but I will tell you one thing. For me, as a new podcaster, it's amazing. There's all sorts of tools, growth labs, etc. The team is so hands-on at Captivate FM, they will help you through your journey. The interface and the features are amazing. You got to check it out. If you're a podcaster or content creator, you want to distribute your stuff, go to CaptivateFM.com. They'll go ahead and give you 7 free days off the bat. But I'll tell you what, if you go to my Quite the Thing Media page, quitethethingmedia.com/podcastfather, there at the bottom, you'll find an affiliate link. You can get 30 days of Captivate FM free why wouldn't you check it out? Captivate FM. This podcast is sponsored by Good Pods, my great friends at Good Pods. This is an amazing app, guys. You get on there, you see what podcast your friends and influencers are listening to. Download the Good Pods app. All the music on this podcast is from the artist Young Karts. Young Karts, he's a great independent artist. You got to check out all the work. Go to the site, youngkartsbeats.com. If you want to contact me, you can find me on Twitter at podcast_father, or the podcast actually has an account too at indie_podcaster, or good old fashioned email, always great too, thepodcastfather@gmail.com. You want to support this podcast? One great way you can do for me is you can go onto your favorite podcast listening platform, may that be an Apple or Good Pods, and give me a rating. Throw me a 5-star. Type some nice things to me. If you don't even want to type, don't worry about it. Just throw me some stars. Any feedback is appreciated. I really do appreciate it. If you want to get real crazy and support me, you can always buy me a coffee. Check it out on my Quite the Thing media page. That's enough for the business. Let's get to the view. Joining me today is a very special guest. It's Ian Saunders of the Cold War Conversation podcast. How are you doing today, Ian?
I'm doing really well, thanks. Thanks for having me on. I'm delighted to be able to share the Cold War Conversation story.
I'm not even sure how you and I linked up. And I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of the podcast initially, right? I've been getting dozens of smaller podcasts hitting me up on Twitter. Then I saw yours come in and I thought, how the heck have I never heard of this podcast before? Next thing I know, I'm about 4 or 5 episodes in, and where have you been? You know, what have I been missing here?
Well, I've been tweeting like mad and pushing it all out on social media like you're supposed to. So, but, you know, there's a lot of noise out there and it is difficult to, find an audience, I think, particularly if you're a new podcaster. I've managed to build an audience, but it has been over quite a long period. It just doesn't come overnight. It's taken me, 3 years to build a sort of monthly audience of about 75,000 now.
Yeah, and that's incredible, because I know on the entry form, the submission form off the site, that was one of the things you mentioned to talk about how over time you've built this. It didn't happen overnight, right? And how you over 3 years have got to these numbers. It's incredible. But before we get into all that, Ian, so tell us about you and your history, your background, and why you have such a passionate and deep understanding and knowledge of the Cold War.
Well, I grew up in it. It was my formative years. The Cold War ended in my mid-20s. So, not the whole of the Cold War, but a significant part of the Cold War was through my childhood and through my teenage years. And it was an ever-present feature of that period. The Soviet Union looked like it would never disappear. The Berlin Wall looked as solid as anything. And then it all, changed in 1989. And I've always been fond of history and wanted to start a podcast. I'd done a little bit of community radio work a number of years before, but wanted to start a podcast and thought this is a good subject. And also, you can talk to people who actually experience this period. So you can record their voices and their experiences. And I found that a really compelling subject.
Yeah. So you're well studied in the subject. So tell us about that. From an educational standpoint, do you have that history, like you just kind of mentioned, but is that educationally speaking something that you focused on growing up?
I never went to university. I left school and worked in a department store. So I've always been interested in history, but the majority of my history is self-taught, as you can see by the library behind me. I've always read a lot of history books and studied the period and sort of just assimilated that knowledge. And that is really useful when you obviously start a podcast about a particular subject. is you need to have a decent level of knowledge of that subject and also a passion about it that's going to continue beyond 7 episodes, let's say.
So you had a vision about starting a podcast. You talked about a little bit of radio history as well, which I can relate to there. So at what point in time did you, and what exactly made you think, hey, I should start a podcast and it should cover the Cold War? Obviously, you had the interest growing up in it.
Yeah. Well, I discovered podcasts probably about four or five years ago. And the first podcast I discovered that I listened to regularly was a podcast called Spybury, which was all about spy books and spy literature. And I got in contact with the host, and it turned out he had a mutual interest in the Cold War, but much more specifically, he had an interest in East Germany. And he suggested that, you know, you should start a podcast. You'd be great doing a podcast about East Germany. And I thought, I'd like to have something a bit broader. I'd like to have a subject matter that isn't that limiting, because I was thinking about longevity and, you know, making sure I didn't run out of subjects to talk about in episodes. So I thought, well, let's do Cold War, because that is a broad subject. I should be able to find enough people to talk to about that. And then let's see how it goes.
And the rest
is history, as you say.
Exactly. Like I said, I've caught up on about 5 episodes. And how long did it take to get those kind of people onto the podcast? How do you find them? That was another question.
Well, okay. Well, surprisingly early, I had some good guests. And this was mainly around finding people on social media and asking them. Early on, I saw that Gary Powers Jr., who was the son of, if you've ever seen the film Bridge of Spies,
yes.
You know the pilot that gets shot down?
Yeah.
Gary Powers Jr. is his son. So I got in contact with him because I wanted to hear the story of his father. And he said, fine, yeah, I'll chat with you. I mean, it helped that he had a book coming out at that time as well. But what often happens is I get a guest on, and after they've been interviewed, they say, you know what, you should really speak to so-and-so. I can put you in contact with them. And it sort of just leads on and on from there. And one of the leads that led on from that was the son of the former Soviet leader, Nikita Khrushchev. And Nikita Khrushchev was the Soviet leader at the time of the Cuba Missile Crisis. And so by just building on these guests, you get sort of like a stronger and stronger calling card when you're approaching other people to say, you know, look, this is a credible podcast. It's a quality podcast. You know, I'd really like to have you on the show. And our listeners, I am sure, would be really interested in your story.
And you do have some very good listeners, audience, fans, whatever you're going to call it, we'll call it audience. What would you say the group of audience that you appeal to is?
In the main, as you would imagine, it's people who are interested in the Cold War or who lived through that period and are interested in the stories. I think some of the audience does split down by particular subject. So, for example, if I do an episode involving spies or espionage, that will tend to be quite strong.
The sexy stuff, right?
Sorry?
The sexy stuff, it appeals.
Yeah.
Espionage.
Yeah. Or if I do an aviation-themed episode with a pilot or something like that, yeah, it will be stronger. But you know, probably the areas that I enjoy the most are the stories that have never been recorded before. You know, the unknown stories. And like you were saying, you're listening to a 3-part story at the moment, which is with Ralph Hainel, who was interrogated by the East German secret police for 10 months and then put in jail. And that is a story that's not been heard before. Even though he's written a book, it hasn't really been published that widely. And it's those sort of stories that really excite me, is finding and giving voice to people whose stories could get lost over time.
And I think that's important. That's an important thing that you're doing as well, right? Because these stories can get lost over time, but we need something like this to make sure they don't, and to spread and share these important stories of history.
Yeah. I mean, my father was a World War II veteran, and I was very conscious that some of the stories of these veterans were, you know, lost before they could be recorded. And, you know, one of the sort of tagline for the podcast is, you know, Cold War Conversations, recording the stories of the Cold War before they're lost. And that is the primary objective here, is to build an oral history archive that is preserved for future generations, which are firsthand accounts of people's experiences of the Cold War.
Let me ask you something about the Cold War. When, in your opinion, because like we were discussing before we hit the record button, when did this war start? You can find about a million different things of when it's people say it started.
It is interesting. What's your opinion? There is some variation there. I would argue that it did start in 1945 with the defection of Igor Guzenko, who was a Soviet cipher clerk in the Soviet embassy in Ottawa in Canada. He defected and revealed to the Canadian government and Western governments that there was a huge infiltration of government, intelligence services, all areas of Soviet agents. And this was the first time that the Western governments had been aware of this. And it was sort of like the warning that their former allies in World War II were looking to undermine their democracies and their way of life. So I would say 1945.
Yeah, which my research, 1947, the Truman Doctrine. So you're actually going back a couple of years before then.
Yeah, I would say 45, because it was the first real indication as to the extent of Soviet interference in the workings of the governments of the West. And I'm using just the West as a shorthand term there. You know, it wasn't just governments of the West. It was, you know, other governments worldwide. But it was the first hard evidence of that level of infiltration and the intents of the Soviet Union to, you know, subvert the democratic way of life of those governments.
And as far as an ending point, I was obviously a young child, not even in what we would call middle school here yet, but I still remember all the, you know, Reagan speaking, and I vividly remember all that happening. So as far as an endpoint, what do you say? Because normally you'll see 1991, you know, when the dissolution of the Soviet Union. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. I would agree. It's December 91 when the hammer and sickle is drawn down for the last time from the top of the Kremlin in Moscow. I mean, the Cold War had got a lot warmer. The tensions had very much decreased in the years following the arrival of Mikhail Gorbachev. So the tensions weren't as heightened as they had been in the Cold War, but I would say 1991.
This war is not always the most popular one, right? Even though it went on for such a long period of time and had so much happen in it, it just doesn't always have that appeal that some of the larger wars does. You think that's because there probably was no large-scale fighting between the two superpowers directly?
I think so. Obviously, there were large conflicts in this period. And, you know, the largest one that people will be familiar with will be the Vietnam War, which wasn't a direct war between the NATO or the Western powers and the Soviet Union. It was more of a proxy war. Which was often how the superpowers, the US and the Soviet Union, sort of butted up against each other, is they used proxy forces for conflicts, albeit the US was directly involved in Vietnam. Prior to then, there's the Korean War, where members of the United Nations were in direct conflict with the Army of China, much lesser known war. Did a fascinating interview with a guy who was captured and held by the Chinese for about a year and a half, I think 2 years, after one of the battles in the Korean War. But it is a bit of a forgotten war there. But there were loads of proxy wars, for example, in Africa. You know, there was obviously the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan as well towards the end of the Cold War. So there were armed situations, but the big worry was an outbreak of war in the center of Europe with the Warsaw Pact armies crossing the East-West German frontier and crossing into Western Europe, which thankfully never materialized.
Absolutely. There were, like you were saying, proxy wars, regional wars. There were a lot of regional conflicts that came of this. But this war actually is very appealing in the sense of storytelling, right? Because you got to think of the psychological warfare that went on here, propaganda campaigns, espionage, spies, all that stuff that really makes a good, great story by definition of what people seem to enjoy these days. The Cold War actually had all that.
Absolutely, absolutely, and some, to be honest. I mean, one of the most fascinating interviews was with a guy who was a KGB deep cover agent in the US called Jack Barsky. If you've ever watched the series The Americans, he was basically like the Americans. He was an illegal agent in so much that he came in under an assumed name or a false name, false documentation, and then went undercover and tried to gain economic information on the US during the 1970s and 80s. But, you know, the civilian story I find really interesting. You know, I interview people from Czechoslovakia and Poland and hear about their experiences. A lot of them are very similar to the Western experience of, you know, going to school, you know, messing around with friends, falling in love, marrying, all of the sort of stuff that you would expect. But there's little changes that, you know, they have to watch what they say at school. They have to watch what they say outside. They have strange lessons in subjects like Marxism, Leninism, and, you know, they're conscripted into the army and, you know, a whole range of experiences that perhaps many of us never had in the West.
What I did before this interview with you, I went around to some coworkers that I have, I manage, and I asked that they're younger and asked them what this war meant to them, what they got from this war. They had a really hard time giving me anything at all. But I think one thing that may go unrealized, but it was such a long period of time, but the threat of nuclear warfare and that development of that was very real during this time period.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that was probably the thing that I most remember from my childhood is that, you know, you weren't thinking about it all the time, but in the back of your mind was that I might not wake up the next day because somebody might press the button. And, you know, there's some well-documented situations where almost by accident, the world could have destroyed itself in a thermonuclear exchange. There's obviously situations like the Cuban Missile Crisis. And some listeners will be familiar with a NATO exercise called Able Archer, which there's various interpretations as to how the Soviets reacted to that. But there appears to be evidence that the Soviets thought that this exercise was actually a preliminary to the US launching nuclear missiles at the Soviet Union as a first strike. And there's some evidence of the Warsaw Pact countries readying their forces for a counterattack should that have happened. So the nuclear threat is an interesting one. You know, I've spoken to people like the commander of a nuclear ballistic missile submarine about, you know, how he would have felt pressing the button. And it's interesting talking to people who had that level of responsibility and asking them, you know, would you have done that? Would you have pressed the button? Because, I mean, obviously, if missiles have been launched at your country, all you're going to do is cause even more destruction in that other country and what their thoughts were about that. And those are interesting questions where I've had surprising honesty from some guests around that question.
I do want to take another second here to talk about the sponsor of this podcast, Good Pods. Like I mentioned earlier in the intro, you can see what podcasts your friends and influencers are listening to. This app is great, and the creators and team Good Pods are very serious about making you the greatest listening experience for a podcast. Not only just the quality of the audio listening piece, but also the social aspect. This is a really awesome app. I can't suggest it enough. I'm very involved in there. They're very dedicated to podcasters, independent podcasters, and listeners. I have a couple groups on there you should go check out. The Indie Podcasters group, highlight indie podcasters, obviously. I've also recently created a true crime group. I'm a big true crime fan. You should join both of those groups. And every week, we do pick podcasts out of the Indie Podcasters group to highlight in the recommended section. But once again, I'll say it again, the Good Pods team is a great team of people. I can personally vouch for them, but they're also dedicated to making this app as good as possible. You can talk to them on social media directly. They will respond. They take all recommendations very serious. There's a great team at Good Pods. Make sure you download the Good Pods app and listen to your podcast there. Let's get back to the interview. You want to go in? What was one of them, for an example?
Well, one of the guys I interviewed, as I said, was a commander of a Polaris nuclear missile submarine. And he was the deputy commander, and he spoke with his commander, and they talked about what circumstances they would launch nuclear missiles. And they had a conversation where they said, unless they were certain that the United Kingdom had already been attacked, they would refuse to launch the nuclear missiles, i.e., they wouldn't launch the missiles as a first strike if they were ordered to.
Wow.
Which was a really interesting conversation. In fact, his view on Britain's nuclear deterrent has moved on to the fact that he believes that Britain shouldn't have a nuclear deterrent and should spend money on other things. He doesn't feel there's a need for it anymore.
We're obviously from different parts of the world, but over here during this time period, you see a lot of historical footage on how they were trying to train students how to react to this during the school day if these situations were to come up.
They released in the 1980s a civil defense pamphlet called Protect and Survive, and it showed you how to build a fallout shelter in your house by taking the doors off rooms and piling pillowcases and blankets on top of the doors and carrying under these doors. And the pamphlet was absolutely ridiculed in the UK, because any sane person sort of recognized that there was going to be no defense against the level of nuclear exchange that could have happened during that period.
Exactly. You go from World War II, like you just said, atom bomb, and then you see how this progresses over time. And this really did start this whole movement, even that we see today, that fallout shelter scenarios, the survival scenarios that we see today, most of that came from this time period.
Yeah.
And there's television shows about it. There's podcasts about it. And I don't know if everybody realizes where exactly that came from.
Yeah. And there's almost been a bit of a similarity with it, with COVID, with, you know, shortages of food, queues at shops, hoarding, you know, stockpiling supplies. I mean, you know, there are echoes of that in the present day, when there's that breakdown of, you know, the ways of life that we're used to, of just being able to go to a shop and stuff being there on the shelves. And when it's not there, that panics people and creates this sort of whirlpool of, you know, fear that we're going to run out of toilet paper.
And yes, there was that, and there still is that great fear.
Yeah.
Took you weeks over here to find toilet paper last year.
So
speaking of COVID, how did that, because we know it had a big impact on the podcast industry, how did it impact your podcast? Because you're 3 years in, like you said, did you see that significant jump during the pandemic of an audience?
I I didn't see a significant jump. I've had a gradual increase since I started 3 years ago. One thing I did, because one thing I was worried about when the pandemic started is that I had this feeling that a lot of fans listen during their commute to work. Mm-hmm. And with them not commuting to work, that would lead to the decline in listeners. And certainly I think the first April, I had a slight dip, but then it just carried on, you know, increasing on a month by month basis. I think one of the big benefits I found of COVID is being able to get hold of guests to interview, because everybody was at home wanting to do stuff. So it was really easy to interview people.
You've had all sorts of guests with all sorts of credentials. If the audience listening to this podcast right now, what would you suggest to them as far as going back to an episode, to a guest? What would you suggest from your podcast?
Wow.
That's a tough one, I know, because I read through your episodes.
180-odd episodes, six exactly. days worth of audio. Okay, there's one or two that stand out. One is an episode called, I can't remember what the episode's called now. It's with a woman who lived in Romania, and her father is arrested by the Romanian secret police because he's gone on a one-man anti-government protest. And it's a really powerful episode because she tells the story of coming home from school and finding the front door open and the house full of secret police. And she's 12 years old, and they're saying, wow. Where's your father? You know, where's your mother? And the secret police just ransack the place. They're under surveillance. She has to go and see her father in the prison. It's a really powerful story. It's called Childhood Under the View of the Secret Police, I think that one's called. The other ones that are standouts is the three-parter that's currently going out at the moment, which is with a guy who lived in East Germany called Ralph, who tries to start his own kung fu school in East Germany and comes under the watch of the East German secret police. And he gets interrogated by the Stasi for 10 months and then put in prison. That's a really interesting one.
I'll vouch for that. That's where I'm on. I just finished part two of that one. Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he's a great guest. Another one was with the last British commandant of the British sector in Berlin during the Cold War. So he was a major general in the British Army, but he went to Berlin in his early army service and was on one of the first trains into West Berlin after the Berlin Wall had gone up. And he talks of a confrontation on this train where the train gets stopped in the middle of East Germany. And these East German railway police stop the train, and he's arguing with them. And these East German railway police cock their weapons, and he's got like five British soldiers with him, and they cock their weapons. And I think the line he says is that I could see in my eyes the seeds of World War III starting.
Wow.
And there's, you know, countless ones like that there. I mean, they're not all oral history interviews. I do interviews with authors and academics as well in there, and visits to museums as well. And that's one of the things I enjoy about it, is I try and keep it varied rather than the same formula week in, week out. And I think that's what helps to grow the listenership and, you know, keeps people listening. It's not always predictable. You don't know what you're going to get from one week to the next.
Exactly. Then that is critical. And that's what makes it an interesting listen. It's fascinating, the people that you've got on there. And you were so, I'm sure to an extent, very well educated on the subject before you started this podcast. But how much have you learned listening from these different people that were a part of this?
I've learned a huge amount. And you know, my approach is that although some people view me as sort of like a Cold War expert, I don't I don't know everything, but I'm always interested in learning, and I'm inquisitive. And I think that's a good way to be if you're doing an interview-based podcast, you need to be inquisitive and you need to be interested in the subject. I remember listening to an interview with Larry King, who was the famous interviewer on CNN. And he said that he would go into interviews knowing nothing about his guests, because he wanted to be in the same position as the listener or the viewer. And, you know, his job was to ask interesting questions and get the most out of that guest. Now, I wouldn't recommend just not preparing at all. I do prepare for the interviews and I do research the guests, because I think they, you know, I'm not as good an interviewer as Larry King. And, you know, the guest deserves some respect that I have understood who they are and, you know, what they've experienced. But I think I take a bit of that Larry King technique, I guess, certainly in terms of being inquisitive and, you know, not necessarily afraid to ask a difficult question, because, you know, certainly with that Polaris missile submarine commander, I'm not sure anybody would have asked him the question, or many people would have asked him the question of, you know, did you think about not firing the missiles?
So you and I were having a really good conversation before we started recording about the independent creators. And that's kind of what my podcast is highlighting, different creators in general or interested individuals. But there is a little bit of a focus on the independent guys like myself. You started this podcast 3 years ago from scratch, and you've built quite the audience and, you know, north of 1 million downloads 3 years later. What advice do you have overall for creators starting out?
I would say, number one, choose a subject where you're not going to run out of content is probably the important thing. Number two is choose a subject you are still going to be passionate about in 3 or 4 years' time or 10 years' time. And the other thing is be consistent. I have produced a podcast episode every week since March 2018. So my listeners know and expect that episode to drop on a Saturday morning every week. And, you know, I'm always heartened when I get emails from listeners who and quite moved by some of the emails, because they will say things like, I always look forward to your podcast, to listen to it on a Saturday evening. I reserve some time on a Saturday evening to listen to your latest episode. And, you know, I'm really humbled and honored that they are prepared to devote their time to listen to content I've created. And that loyalty, I think, comes from consistently turning up week in, week out on a Saturday and giving them an episode. And I think consistency is important, and also producing evergreen content. I'm lucky that with my subject matter, it doesn't date. If you listen to one of the episodes in 20 years' time, it will still be as relevant as it is now. And that really helps, because when I get new listeners join, they will generally start looking through or going through the entire back catalog, which, as I said before, is about 6 days worth of audio. So you probably need to be a real hardcore fan to go through that. But I regularly get emails of people saying, I'm almost there. I'm up to episode 150.
And that's a lot, and that's dedication, and that shows you that your hard work has paid off. So what's next for the podcast, besides just keep on chucking along and doing on what you're doing? What would you like to see next, or what would you like to kind of build upon?
It's really finding the time. I mean, just producing it as it is takes a lot of time. You know, I would like to do more video and work on the YouTube channel. We currently have a YouTube channel, but that is really just the podcast with a fixed image on the video. And I do have two guys who record the odd episode for me as well, which, you know, takes some of the pressure off from me of producing this stuff week in, week out. But I think I'd want to do more with video, but also I want to, you know, I want to help other podcasters, you know, benefit from what I've learned over the last 3 years. But the primary reason for starting the podcast was to build this oral history archive. So, you know, one of the things I do want to make sure is that there is a firm plan in place to make sure that this content isn't lost when I can no longer produce it. So, you know, I'm working with a number of sound archives to make sure that, you know, the content is preserved and is going to be easily accessible for people, because it would be an absolute, you know, travesty, you know, if you know, some of this stuff was lost.
Which is also why you started to begin with, right?
Yeah, so 100%. I mean, you know, that's the reason. Preserving Cold War history has been the primary reason for doing this. It's been a really enjoyable journey along the way. And, you know, ending up speaking to people who, if I hadn't have started this podcast, I would have no right to speak to. I mean, you know, speaking to the son of a former Soviet leader, speaking to a nuclear missile commander, a major general, you know, a young woman who was, you know, whose house was raided by the Romanian secret police. I mean, incredible stories that really deserve a wider audience. Whether you're interested in the Cold War or not, there's some really powerful stories in there. And there's too many to mention, but, you know, just go to coldwarconversations.com and have a look around.
That's what I was going to get ready to let you plug. But I will say that I think your podcast and yourself are significant piece of history that we can go back to and reference for history. But yeah, go ahead and tell everybody listening where they can go and check all your stuff out at.
Right. Well, we are on all the major podcast platforms. So if you just search Cold War Conversations on any of the podcast platforms, you'll find us there. Or you can go to our website, coldwarconversations.com, and all the episodes are listed on there as well. They are tagged by subject, so there's like a tag cloud on there so that you can search by subject. And what I am heartened to find is that the podcast content is being used by educators now. I did a talk to Leeds Beckett University a few months back to the students there that were using the content for their Communism in East Europe module. And I'm in fact doing a talk in a couple of days' time to a load of history teachers, telling them about Cold War Conversations and how they can use it to teach the Cold War as well. So the project has changed over time, but the primary objective is to preserve these stories and to make them more widely available to people, whether they're educators or just people who just want an interesting and exciting story.
I could sit here and talk to you all day about this, and we'll have to get together again very soon. And I have a lot of respect for you and what you've built. You're doing an incredible job, and I can't suggest people enough, go check out Cold War Conversations. Thanks for participating in Father Time today. Get it, podcast father? Thought that was pretty clever. Father Time. Well, seriously though, Ian, thanks for coming on the show today. You're actually the first person I've interviewed.
Oh, great. Well, that's a real honor. Thank you for that. But no, I'm glad, you know, as I said before we started recording, I'm glad that I can help. I think, you know, what you're planning to do and what you're going to deliver there, I think is a great idea. Is highlighting these independent podcasts, which, you know, there's some real hidden gems out there that people are just not finding, because I think there is a problem with podcast search in the whole world of podcasting. The apps are not great on search.
They'll only reference you to some of the bigger ones, right?
Sorry?
They reference you to some of the bigger ones mostly.
Well, this is the thing. And I get I guess I understand that because some of the bigger ones are paying to get more highly ranked, or, you know, because they've got some celebrity on there, they're generally going to be more popular. But, you know, I guess with Cold War conversations, you know, you can build a decent size audience without being a celebrity. You just need to make sure that you're building a quality product and that you're doing that consistently, and people will find you. I mean, you need to do some work to try and find them. So, you know, build up your social media following, or find maybe one social media platform, which is where your most likely demographic is going to be located, and then do a lot of work on that. I mean, I do a lot of work on social media, but I just sort of do it during a coffee break or tea break or something like that. It doesn't necessarily need to take up a lot of your time, but it can help you to build an audience and, you know, build a profile out there.
And your audience does seem to participate and get involved and engage with you quite a bit.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I have a Facebook group, a Facebook discussion group, which is great because my audience are in the main as inquisitive as I am. And within that Facebook group, a lot of the guests I have on go in there as well. So it allows almost like an extension of the episodes in there, almost like an after show party to some degree, or maybe I'm exaggerating that somewhat. With Twitter, that's been particularly successful for me there. And I've been messing around with Instagram, but there's, you know, it's difficult to devote time to every platform. So you tend to have to pick one that works for you or where you think most of your listeners are.
So we'll see everybody over at the Cold War after party then, huh? No, again, I appreciate you taking the time to get on this meeting with me today, have this interview. I really do. We make sure we'll keep in touch. And thanks for all you're doing for the podcast community.
Well, no, my pleasure. And, you know, anything I can do to help support the independent podcast community is a good thing in my view. I think, you know, we've got to keep supporting these grassroots podcasters and keep the podcasting world as level a playing field as we can. I do fear sometimes that there's these walled gardens starting to form, which may tilt some of the organizations with more money in favor versus the independent podcasters. But I could be wrong there, and I hope that they would want to support independent podcasters as well, because, you know, they're also providing content to these big money platforms as well.
Oh, for sure. 100% I agree. Something you got to preserve and then develop and help others grow, so the industry does get to that, not only sustains, it does get to that next level. Yeah. Once again, Ian, thanks. So we're going to catch up soon.
Well, no, my pleasure, Jeff. And I'm still amazed that I was your first guest. Thank you very much for that.
Oh, no problem at all. Pleasure is all mine. Keep in touch, okay, friend. Really do appreciate you listening to this episode and checking it out. I hope you continue to do so with the next. I hope you have an appreciation for what I'm trying to do here. Highlight all the different things, all sorts of different creators are doing. I hope you get behind me on that and continue to join me on my journey. I'm Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. See you next time.